guys, and welcome to Jesus Christ. Episode something. Episode Steve, you throw me off, man.
It was Kevin Durant last time.
It's episode Jerome Bettis. Got that, but I just
it's the bus episode.
We just had to put on the heat game for Steve, so now it's just going to be random yelling throughout this entire episode. Did I even announce what the name of this show is?
You said
bus. It's called the actual name of the podcast.
I doubt it.
51 Yard Line.
It is.
And you would think I'd be better at this by now, but I'm not, and who cares? As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, the incorrigible Drew Willers.
I just want to congratulate the only dynasty ever to be part of the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota Lynx. Thank you for winning 3 major championships in 5 years. Where's your WNBA title, Green Bay? What?
What? Oh, sorry.
We're doing a show, man. We're doing a show. We're
to my other left, the man, the myth, the legend, Stephen A. Cravens.
What's going on, everybody?
He's intense.
We got a hell of a show for you today.
Yeah, we do. let's start with some week last week? Week 6 grades.
Yoss.
Rapid fire style. Lander Jones, go.
Oh, I would give him a B+.
Hell yeah, I would.
Came in off the bench. I don't know how many first team reps the guy had, and has great rapport with Martavis Bryant. Yeah, thought he looked great. Obviously, the defense wasn't prepped for him. Didn't watch any game tape on him. There's always a little bit of a benefit, I feel like, a backup has when they get into a game in those kinds of situations. But yeah, B+, played great.
He did indeed. I got nothing more to add.
Okay. Well. All right. Nice. Well. Greg Olsen.
Ooh.
A+.
I think it's a little generous. Played well. Dude, secret's out on how to beat Seattle. Use your tight ends.
The 49ers didn't hear about it.
Well, they didn't do it. We'll get into that a little bit later. But they didn't do it. I'd say a solid B. I don't know what it is, man. They looked pretty anemic through 3 quarters, but Seattle's Legion of Boom doesn't show up for the 4th quarter at all. I don't know what the deal is, but they don't play defense in the 4th quarter.
Cam Newton and Greg Olsen did.
Oh, no, I mean, but
The Panthers did.
Even on the last play of the game, it was a blown coverage. How often do you see that? It was between
Earl Thomas. On a play that they had just done a quarter ago.
Yeah, literally had just done it. Yeah.
And between Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, how does that happen?
I don't know.
Completely blown coverage. But yeah, I'd say B-. Well, nothing crazy to write home about, but yeah, I thought he played well.
Greg Olsen's not on that team. They don't win that game. They don't win a lot of games. I don't think they win that game.
Yeah, I mean, who else are they going to throw to?
Exactly. Sure, I don't think they win that game. Looking back on their other games, I mean, he's a big part of what they do now that they don't have Kelvin Benjamin. I think Cam Newton deserves a little bit of credit for being able to run the offense.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I think he was a big reason why they won their other games, too. But definitely that last game, for sure.
Eli Manning.
No. Well, you know what? As much as it kills me to say it, I give that guy a B+.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it?
For what?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying against the 49ers game. Sorry.
No problem.
Against the Eagles.
That's
an F performance for sure.
I don't know, man. Guy got a lot of money, and he's not playing particularly well at all.
He was for a while there.
For a minute, probably, but even then, his poor clock management cost him a game, and he's had very inconsistent, shoddy play. A lot of interceptions. I want to give him a little bit of a break because he still doesn't have Victor Cruz out on the field, but still have, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. You still have, it's not like Larry Donnell. He's not a great pass-catching tight end, but he's serviceable. Yeah, got to be better.
He wasn't in that game, though, man. He dropped, Steve? He dropped, 3 or 4 really easy passes Larry Donnell did.
Mm-hmm. It's just hard for me to believe that in the NFC East that the Eagles could be the best team right now. I mean, technically, yes, it should be the Cowboys. No Dez, no Romo. But right now, it's so hard for me to wrap my head around. Yeah, man, I'm gonna go D. Based upon my expectations on how he should play, how much money he got in the offseason. That's horrible. That's a divisional game. Big stage. Played horribly.
He always plays terribly in Philadelphia, though, doesn't he? Last year, didn't they get shut out in Philadelphia on Sunday night?
For some reason, the Eagles always have their number, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I remember last year they got shut out big time by Philadelphia in Philly. But still, that's whatever superstition, you know, whatever you want to talk about. I just think he did terrible. He played terribly.
Yeah.
Awful. I wish he showed up that particular Sunday against the 49ers. That would have been fantastic. Be looking at a 3-4 record, said 2-5. Fuck.
Dan Campbell.
Oh, I mean, playing a pretty anemic Tennessee Titans team across the board, both offensively and defensively. That being said, he was clearly a shot in the arm. It was a completely, I watched the whole game, completely different team that showed up that Sunday. So getting your first W, looking at where the team was, coming off the bye, having to regroup, get your guys together, and to go out and not just win, but to dominate the entire game on both sides of the ball. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give the dude an A-.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like you said, went up against a pretty anemic Titans.
Oh, dead. Yeah, only reason why I'm not giving him an A. But first-time head coach, terrible atmosphere. Your big free agent is a freelancer. Nobody's buying in right now. Your quarterback is throwing hissy fits over poor play against the practice squad. It's all diseased. You go to London, you lose, you fire your head coach. Man, I've seen some interim head coaches have to take over in some particularly terrible situations. That's a bad situation to take over in, and he came out and they dominated. If they would have barely won, it might take a little bit of heat off of it, but they came out and they performed the way the Miami Dolphins should have been playing from the start of the season.
I agree. I'll go ahead and give him a B, and I won't give him a B plus or an A, simply because of what he said, that with the Dolphins, that he wanted to build borderline, you know, dirty players. He wanted to have borderline dirty players.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
You didn't hear that?
I didn't hear that either.
I didn't hear that. What did he say?
He wanted the Dolphins, especially on defense, to be borderline dirty. And that hit against Mariota brought a lot of heat against Campbell. Yeah. I don't know how you guys didn't hear about this, because they brought it up. They're like, you know, Dan Campbell said it to the media that he wants to have borderline dirty players. He wants to have borderline dirty players that border on that edge of being very aggressive or, you know, being dirty. That play against Mariota, yeah, I forgot the name of the player that apologized for it. Yeah, he apologized for it, but a lot of people were looking at Campbell like, you said this to the media that you were going to allow this kind of these kind of plays and these kind of...
That's not good. I didn't follow the story that closely.
I
didn't hear anything like that.
Yeah, I saw that, and I mean, listen, I get what he's trying to say. He wants to kind of build bullies. He wants to build tough players.
I get that if he would have used that phrase.
But he used the term borderline dirty.
That's bad. That's a guy not knowing how to handle the media.
I think I would, just because it's a first time, I'm willing to give him, I agree with Tyler, I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass.
That's fine, but I mean, I think he also said what he meant.
He's not the only coach that means that when they say they want bullies.
He meant what he said completely. He should have tidied it up and presented it better. So it
he'll
didn't come
he'll
off
get his media coaching.
Yeah.
He'll
but that said, coaching. He's still, you know, a play like that.
Yeah,
against
no, absolutely,
Mariota,
absolutely.
He's condoning this kind of, you know, shit to happen. Yeah. So
I think that, but yeah, that's not good. That's not the way you want to articulate what you want out of your players. That being said, this Dolphins defense was supposed to be full of bullies, and it was getting bullied around quite a bit in the first few games. So for them to go out and manhandle a team that they were supposed to manhandle, coming off of a pretty dull week, yeah. No, well, but that's bad. That's not good.
No, it's not. And and we'll see how they do against the Pats.
Hopefully clean it up. Oh, that'll be interesting to see.
But as far as what he did in one game against the Titans, yeah, it's not great. But you know what? Who knows? If Philbin was the coach, they might have lost that game.
Nah. Dude, I'm. It's going to be really interesting for me going forward. We won't spend too much more time on this because I know we got to keep it rolling. But it'll be really interesting for me to see, moving forward, how much better the Dolphins get, because I think it'll be a strong indicator of how much of this early season sort of implosion was Philbin related, or if it was just players. In either case, obviously not good. But I'm. It's going to be really interesting to see if, you know, now that Philbin's got the boot, how much better the Dolphins elevate their play, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. So,
well, I don't think Dan Campbell's going to be doing the same thing Philbin did, which is telling the defense in practice take it easy on Tannehill.
It's gross.
Yeah, that's gross. That's garbage.
So
that's,
I don't think Dan Campbell's going to be making that same mistake.
I mean,
Regis's brother was not a good coach. Let's just put it out there.
But hold on. And also another thing, to Dan Campbell's credit, he was a player. And players respond to coaches that were players because they know what they're going through. They have that bond,
kinship.
Sure. And Philbin obviously never had that experience, so I think that's a great positive for Campbell and his relationship with the players.
Plus, Philbin just came off to me as a dingbat.
Yeah, he just
his whole attitude last year, where he wouldn't commit to Tannehill as a starter,
I remember that,
creating controversy, and everybody on the team said that they thought it was going to be Tannehill, but the coach was the only, literally the only one in the building that was refusing to commit. He's a dingbat. He's got some Brad Childress syndrome to him. But yeah.
All right, moving on. Who wants to talk about their team first?
I'll get it over with.
All right, Steve.
49ers are toast. They're done. We never really had a shot. Offense is terrible. And that's not – I'm going to go ahead and say this. It was, there was a little bit of confusion on my part. I didn't know if it was Kaepernick or if it was, you know, the entire offense. I didn't know if it was Jeep Chris. I didn't know what was going on. It's not Kaepernick.
I want to talk to you. Okay, give me your bit. I have some things I want to talk about Kaepernick.
Last night was unbelievable in terms of offensive line completely failing. I swear to God, I watched him playing. He snapped the ball. I blinked and he was on the ground.
Our offensive line is bad. Your guys is
terrible.
It's bad.
It's terrible.
Really, really bad.
It's absolutely horrible. And it's not like, it's the Seahawks. No, it's been terrible all season. Seriously, watching the game, I blinked. Oh my God,
you're not wrong.
He has no time to throw the ball. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's not his fault. The game in Arizona where he threw like four picks and two of them pick sixes, yeah, that was him. Everything since.
He's responded great.
Yeah.
Great.
With the amount of time that line has been able to give him from when he has time to pass the ball or scramble.
He won't get credit for it because of how they're losing these games, but responding like he did on the road in a division game against a stout defense, throwing four picks, two pick sixes, to come back and play the way he's had in subsequent weeks, can't ask for anything more.
No, absolutely. I could ask a hell of a lot more from that offensive line.
It's
really bad. And it shows in the running game, too, with Carlos Hyde.
I'm really confused.
Carlos Hyde has his moments of like bursting through when the line actually shoves the fucking defensive line out of the way and allows him a lane to get through. Otherwise, I mean, he's only getting 2 yards a carry. I mean, this offensive line is just terrible. It's absolutely awful, and it's killing this football team. Our defense is doing everything it can. They dropped the ball in New York. Other than that, they've been doing a hell of a job doing the best they can to try to keep us in the game, but you're not going to win games if your quarterback cannot get the ball out of his hands in time to a receiver, tight end, or whoever the hell is open.
They're on the field entirely too much because they have, they punted more times than they got first downs last night?
Anyway, yeah.
That defense is badass at home, too.
Yep.
When they get in front of their home crowd, they play really, really good football.
Yeah, dude, they picked off Russell Wilson twice last night, and you only get 3 points out of it. Granted, one of them was an end zone interception with like 20 seconds left in the second half, whatever. The second pick, that might have been the time when Cap drove down the field enough to get the field goal, but my God, it's awful. It's awful. I feel bad for Cap. He's like, obviously he's going to take a lot of heat. Like, oh my God, you know, is this the guy? You know, it's not his fucking fault that his offensive line can't do the simple job of giving him 3 seconds to throw the ball.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more.
It's not his fault.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, he started off terribly. He absolutely did. But he bounced back. And you know what? I have a feeling if he had an offensive line on the level of like what Tony Romo had last year, holy shit, who knows what Cap could be doing.
So my question for you
regarding
Kaepernick, it's regarding Kaepernick, but also regarding play calling. We've seen, as far as I can see, zero read option. Zero. Read option is a great way, has been a great way, especially for the Niners, especially for the Kaepernick-led Niners, to throw off defensive lines. Who's getting the rock? Are you going to slide right with the running back, only to leave Kaepernick a lane? Or are you going to try to plug the holes and stop Hyde? In which case, if you bite on Kaepernick, then you're leaving that available. Where's the read option? Do they not want to run Kaepernick at all anymore? Is it because of the guaranteed money? I
don't know.
I guess the bottom line for me is last year they didn't run him, right? Mm. The previous season, previous two seasons, you get to the Super Bowl by running him like crazy. You get to the NFC Championship game by running him like crazy. As far as I know, you guys can correct me if I can't think of any major injury he sustained, any kind of fatigue, any kind of bad, really bad shots that he's taken off of the read option in the past couple years.
I don't think any.
I mean, it's hard to catch. I mean, he's going to get hit. He's going to take shots. That's the nature of running the read option. But he runs it so effectively, and the Niners have run it so effectively. And I thought you would think with Tom Sula taking over, like, I could understand why Harbaugh would hedge his bets a little bit and maybe keep Kaepernick in the pocket. Look, you know, seeing as how, okay, am I going to have an opportunity to coach this team long term moving forward? If not, maybe I should do what the GM wants. GM wants me to keep him in the pocket, turn him into a pocket passer. Tom Sula has nothing to lose in his first year as a head coach. So run him. Run the bejesus out of him.
I think it's just a...
Or is it that the offensive line is so anemic that it wouldn't even matter?
I don't think it would matter, man.
I mean, maybe it wouldn't, but they're not even trying.
They ran the read option a little bit on Green Bay.
But if I remember right, by that point, it was pretty much already over at that point. I don't know.
No, well, when they first took the ball on the offense, Cap's first play was the read option.
Well, it was a read option.
He got a first down, but...
You can't run the read option effectively long-term if you can't have more than a second to make a decision.
Completely agree, but I also don't understand... I mean, and I like Colin Kaepernick. I think he's a good quarterback. He should not be throwing the ball more than 20 to 22 times a game.
He didn't scramble at all last time.
I mean, he shouldn't be throwing the ball. He's not built that way. And I understand you want, if he becomes a pocket guy, you get more out of him long term.
That's not his game. That's not his strong suit.
It's terrible.
He can work out with Kurt Warner as many off seasons as he wants, but it's not his forte.
It's not his style. It's taking something that is what it is and trying to morph it into something that'll never be.
I mean, but he wasn't even that dude. Tyler, you watch college football. He wasn't that dude in Nevada.
No.
At all. It just confuses me. Because I like Kaepernick. I do. And I want him to do
He's a game changer when you can give him the time to make the decisions and let him make the decisions that he wants to make.
Listen, man, I think it comes down to that line, not giving him enough time to make any kind of decision. I mean, you see him trying to scramble at times, but the defense has already got it.
But at that point, I mean, if you've got defensive ends coming around the corners just to keep him in the pocket, I mean, and you're getting that kind of penetration up front, too. Oh, yeah, looky here. Oh, that kind of penetration up front. Like, he can't do anything with it.
Anyway, but the Niners are fucked. Our season's fucked. We're going to be lucky if we can win two more games, I think, with the way we're playing. And, you know, with 16 draft picks now, we gave one of them to you for...
Hodges.
Yeah.
They might trade... I read an article they might trade Vernon Davis, though.
I saw that today.
Yeah, well, you know what?
I think they should.
Aside from yesterday, where he, like, produced, like, the most yardage he's had since I don't even know when. Probably since week one last year at Dallas.
I think you've gotten your best years out of him. I think you can afford to trade him, get a draft pick back.
I think so. No disrespect to the guy. The guy obviously has been a fan favorite and, you know, was there for our greatest moments. But, you know, you got it. He's not contributing anything, man. He's not. No, he's not. I mean, if you can get anything for him.
And that in this game on Thursday night, if there was going to be a game where he broke out and was huge, it should have been against Seattle. Because that's the only way you're going to beat Seattle is up the middle with your tight ends.
And he did do.
He had his best game to this point, but it wasn't nearly as much as they needed out of him.
We're fucked. I think we're looking at 4-12 at the best, maybe 5-11. With the way we're playing, with that offensive line, I remember reading about it in the preseason, hearing the concerns about it. It's way worse than anything I or any other Niner fan or NFL fan could have ever imagined.
Well, we talked about it before the show started. The thing that just chaps my ass about it is how anemic I thought the defense was going to be, how depleted it felt like it was going to be going into the season, and how much better I thought the offense was going to be. Because they needed to be. And they also, you know, to a degree, got some upgrades. They were able to upgrade at wide receiver with Torrey Smith. Obviously not, you know, a perennial 12-catch guy for a 150 every game. Deep threat, though. He's going to catch you hopefully two or three balls that are 30-plus, hopefully one of them for a touchdown. You were hopefully going to get Vernon Davis back healthy. Carlos Hyde was going to take over the run game. And I honestly thought they were going to get back to what made them so good the last 2 years. And they're just not running Kaepernick. And I don't know if it's because it's coming from upstairs, telling him, hey, you need to make this guy a pocket passer, or if it's because that offensive line is just such a shit show right now.
Could be both.
Could probably
be both. But right now, my money is totally on that offensive line. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on.
Right on.
Vikes?
Vikes squeaked one out 16-10 against Kansas City. I don't know how the Vikings can look so good in a loss against Denver and so pitiful at home against Kansas City in a win. That being said, no Everson Griffin. Still, the defense played great. There was only really one play where the Chiefs were able to do anything. It was on a fourth and short. They ran a little screen pass. We weren't ready for it. Coach Mike Zimmer took responsibility, said it was a bad defensive call on his part. Defense is great. Totally happy with the defense, 100%. Not super happy right now with the way we are operating on offense. And it's mostly, and I like Norv Turner, to me it's mostly due to play calling. This last game, you're able to get in the red zone quite a bit. And the red zone efficiency, the touchdown red zone efficiency right now for the Vikings is something like 40-some percent. That's got to get better. It's got to get better. With Adrian Peterson, with Kyle Rudolph, Charles Johnson, Mike Wallace, you got to score. You got to score touchdowns. You're not going to beat Green Bay. You're not going to beat Seattle. You're not going to beat, hell, you're probably going to have problems with Detroit this week if you can't score when you get into the red zone. And part of it, I thought, was the play calling. Teddy threw two deep balls that got them, in the first half, got them into the red zone. We followed both those plays up with run plays for negative gains. One was like a negative two. The second one was like negative seven. I love Adrian Peterson. Right now, the box is stacked. Meaning, all defenses that we play, regardless of caliber of defense, whether it's a perennial top five unit like Denver, or a dumpster fire defense like, you know, San Diego, outside of their secondary, they're just stacking the box. They're trying to stop AP. AP has been at his best when he's been able to just, you know, pound the rock. The Vikings as a team has been really, really, really good. And I'm thinking back to the Brett Favre 2009 season when Brett, after the first three or four games, much like this season, when we opened up with pounding the rock with AP, giving him the ball 25 times to 30 times a game, that brought defenses in, and then Brett just picked apart secondaries. He did what he wanted because he had single coverage on the outside. He knew exactly where he wanted to put the ball. I think Teddy has the ability to do that. Right now, we're not giving him the keys to. We're not. Now, granted, the throw on third and goal from the 15 where he throws a pick in the end zone, that sucks. I wish Teddy would stop throwing interceptions and turning over the ball in the red zone because that takes points off the board. Regardless, putting him in a third and 13, third and goal from the 13 isn't a good situation to put your second-year quarterback in. It's not. And when he's firing darts to get you down the field and he's completing passes on third and 15, let the kid throw and let him decide when he wants to check to a run. It worked brilliantly in 2009 with Brett Favre. Brett would chip away and chip away mm-hmm. and chip away and chip away and then give one to AP for 48. I think the identity of the offense right now, and it can be subject to change. At the start of the season, it was AP, but I think right now, you need to run the offense through Teddy Bridgewater. Because at the very least, you get to see what you have. I don't think that if they supposedly have all the confidence in the world in him and they're not coddling him anymore, let the kid throw.
Mm-hmm.
Let him throw. Put him in positions. And in the first game of the season that we went and saw with the Niners, I was like, where's the run game? They're not running right off the bat. Well, you know, there wasn't exactly an opportunity for that. Now that AP had a great game against Detroit and an even better game against San Diego, and he broke one for 48 against Denver, defenses know, all right, Vikes are pounding the rock again. Let Teddy throw. When you let him throw this last week in Kansas City, I mean, Stephon Diggs tore it up. So let him throw. Let him throw and and let Teddy decide when it's time to run. Because I think he's I think he's smart enough to understand what Scott Turner, the quarterback's coach, wants, what North Turner, the offensive coordinator, wants. And I just, I think when he has that, when he has defenses on their heels, like, are they going to pass? Are they going to throw? What are they going to do? He's totally efficient. He makes such great third and long throws. I wish they wouldn't have to be third and forever throws. I wish they could be third and six throws, mm-hmm. but that's just not the way the defense. And that just doesn't seem to be the way we're running things right now. Moving forward against Detroit, I was feeling really, really good until I woke up this morning and found out Sharif Floyd's not going to play, and Everson Griffin might not play. That's two of our best defensive players. We're on the road. We're a bad road team. That's the other thing. If the Vikes want to be as good as they think they can be, got to start winning games on the road. You know, depending on how things go the rest of the way here, and granted, Steve, Niners just worked us in that first game. But looking at where the Niners are trending and where we're trending right now, that Niners game on opening night could be a game they look back at and go, you know what, that was an opportunity where we just got our asses handed to us and completely smoked. We didn't show up. And they got to start showing up on the road.
Colts, we're not going to talk about that play. Everybody knows it was the dumbest play probably all year. There's just
can I just say
nothing
one,
that needs to be said
one
about
thing
it.
About the play, just one thing, and not necessarily okay. about the play. The special teams coordinator is not nearly getting enough flack for that.
Agreed.
That's the only thing. Not even, and that's not necessarily about the play. Pagano's handling it well. Yep. He's handling it like a head coach should. Poor Griff Whalen is handling it well too. I'm sorry. I don't know who your special teams coordinator, but the fact that I don't know his name after a play like that, I find a little bit, that's a little disgruntling. I don't think he's getting near enough flack for the lack of communication on that play. That's all I'm going to say.
But at the end of the day, that's Pagano's call. He could have voided that, vetoed that call if he had wanted to. He let a play go through that the center hadn't even practiced once, according to my man Pat McAfee.
The dude got hurt.
That's really alarming to me that in such a big, important game at home, Andrew Luck's first game back, and you're going to let a play like that go forward when you haven't even practiced it? That's really alarming to me.
Well, they had all week. They just didn't practice it.
The center didn't practice it, though.
Yeah, Griff Whalen, the center, the original center.
Right.
They practiced
I know,
it.
But
oh,
I'm
yeah,
saying,
okay.
like, he gotcha. Didn't practice it, so oh, why are you yeah. letting it go forward if one of the two players that needs to make that play happen is not gotcha. Familiar with
I
it?
I thought you were saying they didn't practice
no,
it.
No.
Okay, right on.
I'm saying the center didn't practice it.
Gotcha.
That being said, the game overall was encouraging. I mean, what are you going to do? It's the New England Patriots and your quarterback, and my quarterback hasn't played in 3 weeks. Like, it's tough. It's a
game.
Better game. It turned out to be a much better game than I was expecting. I was expecting another 30-point blowout, to be honest with you. It seems like we finally got our offensive line in check. Luck had a lot more time for the majority of that game. They actually protected him and protected his shoulder, which I was super worried about because he could have easily gotten hurt in that game, and I was calling for him not to play. Honestly, because I thought that was a real possibility. But got through the game. Finally had a decent game on run defense. LeGarrette Blount still broke through for some big gains, but that wasn't the reason we lost that game. All in all being said, we were down 7, and we were in a position to tie the game up, and we made that boneheaded call, and we didn't get a shot at it because New England took that ball and scored on that next drive, and then we were playing catch-up for the rest of the game. Got another one back, but it was just kind of too little too late at that point. I don't know. I don't know what else there is to say. Big game against the Saints.
Who suddenly don't look crap festival anymore.
They looked good in their last game, but that's one we have to win. Because then we have the Panthers after that, and the way they're playing, I don't even know. They are not. I was completely wrong about them before the season started. They look really good. They look tough. But it was an encouraging game. But at the end of the day, it's still a loss, and it's still a loss because of some bad mistakes. And we've just got to tighten up, man. Because
I think the main thing right now, if, as an outsider looking in, at this point, you know, it, barring significant injury, the division is still Indies. I mean, there's no question. Jacksonville's still crap. Houston's still crap. Tennessee's still crap.
And they're back to using Mettenberger.
Exactly. Crap. Yeah. So at this point, I just think you go, okay, didn't get started the way we hoped, but we're still going to get a crack at the postseason here. And you've seen it the last 3-4 seasons. All it takes is for luck to get into the postseason, and then you just kind of let the magic happen. I mean, we've seen plenty of 6 seeds sneak in, win all their road games, and win the big one too. So at this point, and you know Pagano doesn't have – the panic button isn't being hit right now, I don't think, especially after a game like that they played in New England. Or against New England at home.
Considering that was the best Andrew Luck-led game against the Patriots since he's come into the league, and the one play is getting highlighted as maybe costing Pagano his job, I think is unfair. Again, it's still a really, really dumb play, and he's got to tighten up just like the rest of his guys. But at the end of the day, that's not a fireable offense as far as I'm concerned because of how the team played the rest of the game.
I wouldn't have been surprised if the special teams coordinator got fired. I don't find that out of line personally. That's just me. I don't know anything about your special teams coordinator. If that happened to the Minnesota Vikings, given the expectations that, you know, the Colts have in a big spot game like that on national television. I mean, hell, Green Bay canned their special teams coordinator after the debacle that was last year's NFC Championship game. So, Pagano should not be fired for that. I don't understand why the special teams coordinator's not getting more shit for it. But
it's because the GM doesn't like Pagano. And at the end of the day, that's going to cost him his job. There's no question in my mind. He's not our coach next year. Let's move on. How about that Michigan State game?
Oh my God, that not a big, not a huge college football fan. I gotta be. I would say one and two interchangeable, almost interchangeable. I think band on the field is a little bit crazier finish, just because like
definitely
fucking bands on the
and
field.
And I would still argue kick six is bigger than that.
Kick six is pretty
As someone who watched both of those live, like, kick six was still more insane to me.
A kick six? Okay.
Okay, kick six is way, like, it's less likely to happen than a muffed long snap.
I guess maybe, I don't know. The way I look at it is kick six, that was such a long field goal. And for me, you saw it live, so I guess the difference, and I didn't see either one of these games live, so I guess that sort of nullifies the shock factor of it for me, but kick six, we've seen guys return long kicked field goals back for touchdowns.
Sure.
So when you see a return man back there, you think, if this goes short, that guy has a chance. With, I mean, what was it, like 12 seconds 12 running or 10, clock something or something? Like clearly, Michigan State is only going for the block. They didn't even have somebody back trying to return the punt. They were going all in on the block. And you just think to yourself, like, okay, even if this guy muffs it, like, all he has to do is fall on it. The fact that he didn't fall on it and did he try to punt it or throw it again?
He tried to basically rugby kick it because he's an Aussie, so he's used to a rugby player too, I would assume, and he tried to basically rugby style kick it.
That.
And it was
See,
not
that's
good.
What got me is it was just. And it happened so fast. Mm-hmm. Like with kick six, you're like, oh, okay, all right, he's going. Oh my God, he's gonna go. Oh my God, he's gonna go. This just dropped the snap, ball on the ground, game over. And Harbaugh's just standing there like, you gotta be kidding me.
I think what made kick six a bigger deal to me is because it was against Nick Saban.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
And I mean, Harbaugh's great too, but he's. You know, first not even close to the coaching legend that Nick Saban is. That's probably why I think kick six is way more like is bigger. But
I get you. Plus game, SEC, I get that too.
But that game was awesome, man. Like, Christian and I were texting back and forth throughout that whole game, and it was just insane. Like, one play after another.
People can read the exchange.
Yeah, you can read the exchange, right? Okay. Because Christian and I were texting the entire second half of that game, and that's really when the game got good anyway. The first half was... It was a great defensive battle, but there was nothing to write home about in terms of, like, crazy plays. But, man, that second half whistle blew, and holy shit, things just got insane. I just, like, I can't even think of one particular other highlight because there were so many. So many penalties, so many bad penalties, unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, late hit penalties.
Vicious game.
Oh, it was crazy. It was the epitome of an iconic rivalry game that you'll... One you'll definitely see on, like, ESPN Classic. There's no doubt.
Didn't they dislocate, how do you say the guy's name who scored the touchdown? Something, Jalen Strong? Or Jalen Jackson, something. He's got, like, three names or something like that. Didn't he dislocate his hip because of the dog pile on top of him?
Oh, I didn't hear that. I'm pretty sure he, like, hurt.
Because at one point, if you watch the video, his teammates are just, like, all on him. And he's, like... punching, like swiping at them, like, get the fuck off of me, I'm hurt. Yeah, he dislocated his hip after scoring the touchdown because the celebration was so intense.
Yeah, that was the rivalry game, like, we'll remember from this year, definitely. Just like 2 years ago, it was Kick Six. Like,
yeah. Steve, did it make you a little happy to see Harbaugh a little salty?
I saw a little bit. I didn't watch the game, but I did see his reaction to it.
No, you had to watch the play. That had to make you a little happy, a little smiley.
I mean, you don't have bad blood toward Harbaugh, like.
No, I just
I thought you did.
He
doesn't have bad blood. It's not Harbaugh's fault he left.
No, it's not his fault.
I hear you.
It's not his fault at all. Sorry. Well, it is his fault. It is. I mean, like, it's this very strong personality. You rub Jed York the wrong way.
So you don't like Jed York?
I hate that guy.
Yeah, talk about someone you have bad blood for.
A guy who should not be the CEO of that team. I'd like to thank Eddie DiBartolo Jr. for getting into those gambling problems and forcing him to sell it to his sister.
Sorry, man.
Yeah.
Shit happens.
And then he tried to get it back, and she wouldn't give it back to him.
Makes sense. I don't think I would either. You own a football team.
Why are you guys talking so quietly all of a sudden?
I don't know. I don't even want to say it too loud.
It's just, you know, it's just...
It's hard.
It's going to get me mad. Anyway, we had the... how much time we got left?
Hockey.
Like 20 minutes. You want to finish with some hockey?
There's some hockey in there.
All right, Steve.
Well, Panthers started off pretty solid despite the loss last night against the Blackhawks. But you know what? Taking solace in the fact that they are the defending Stanley Cup champions.
Damn right.
And the fact that we lost 3-2 and not by more is a testament to the resilience of the South Florida Kitties. Had a great
game.
They're
a good team.
They are. They're a good team. It's way early in the season. I'm expecting big things. Everybody else in the NHL is apparently expecting big things as well. Read a whole article on teams that you should be paying attention to that are really going to make waves this year. Florida Panthers were number 3 on that list. And it's great to see some of the younger guys, like Barkov and Ekblad really coming into their own, looking a lot more confident inside the rink. And, it's bizarre because I'm not used to seeing the Panthers play good hockey. It's just totally.
I mean, you saw a lot of flashes of it last year, especially once Jager joined the team after the trade deadline.
But, you know, and speaking in turn, you know, this year and last year, I mean, it's totally foreign to anybody who's a fan because, I mean, they've just sucked for so many years. They made the playoffs in 2012, made it to a game 7 against the Devils, who actually went on to win it all that year, I believe. That was the last time they were good, but it's just great to see them competing and giving a lot of teams hard times. And you know, I remember, I think it was 2013, we went to go see the Panthers and they got blown out by the Penguins. I think it was like 5-1. So I'm used to seeing that team suck, but they you can't say that about them anymore, man. They're competitors and they really give you all you can handle. So
they play fast too. That's what really impressed me is they – they don't seem like a fast team with some of the guys that they have. Like, Willie Mitchell is a big guy, like your captain, Willie Mitchell, and he doesn't look like he'd be fast, but he's got some speed. Jágr at 43 somehow still has he's still got that, like, that split-second burst, man, that, like,
Brandon
he can just
Peary
get it. Brandon Peary is
lightning.
Insane. Connor Brickley, Aaron Ekblad, like,
Branson.
All those guys look really, really fast on the ice, man, and that's making it a lot of trouble for some teams to keep up with them, and that's why you had that flurry against Philadelphia in that first
7-1, unbelievable.
Four in the first like period.
It was unbelievable.
Four in the first eight minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It was ridiculous. And also,
no one was expecting that, and I think that's why Philly got caught off guard like that.
It was great. It was great to see. It was great to see the arena totally sold out, and not only that, but sold out with Panthers fans. I'm glad people are starting to support the team again because they deserve it. The organization deserves it because they're actually making a 100% effort to turn this team around and make it relevant in the NHL. Coach Gallant deserves a hell of a lot of credit for really just completely turning this team around. They play for him. He's a great coach. He's got passion and intensity. He speaks well to the younger guys. I'm really, really happy that the Florida Panthers are doing, I wouldn't say great, but they're off to a solid start. And I and a lot of people fully expect them to be there in the playoffs come May.
I like what they're doing with ticket sales. I really like that new package that
they have.
Like,
I think my mom bought it today.
Did she?
Yeah, I think so.
For the whole season?
I think so. She told
me, that's
she was
really
talking earlier this morning. That I think she said that the $79.99 package
four
and
everything. Yeah,
I think she actually did buy it today.
What are the details?
You get two free sodas.
It's basically for every home game, it's a four pack of tickets. Four sodas or waters.
Four hot dogs.
And
there's something else.
Something else, right?
Yeah, I forgot.
Smart.
For 79, yeah. Starting
for
at 79,
99?
Smart.
So, like,
bucks.
Obviously, yeah. That's going to be like the nosebleed seats, but.
Oh, still, man, I mean, hell.
Yeah,
still get
that's
to
still,
go have a good time.
It's an awesome,
game.
That's an awesome
food?
Deal.
Yeah.
That's an awesome deal.
Free food, free drink.
And I've never seen the Panthers win at home before. Every single home game I've ever seen, they've always lost. So, I'm actually kind of looking forward to going home. In December, and hopefully seeing a Panthers win for the first time since I've been watching them. That's what I have to say about those
right.
South Florida Kitties.
The South Florida Kitties.
So Panthers and Blackhawks played last night, and that was a really good game. I caught most of it, most of the first and second period, and then I was too nervous to watch those last 5 or 6 minutes of the third period after the Panthers made it 3-2, but we're looking okay. We got off to a slow start, and our defense needs some work, only because Duncan Keith is now out for 6 weeks because he had knee surgery. So that really sucks, because his replacement is someone I am really excited about, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, but he's a second year who only played about 20 games last year before he had season-ending injury. So he's still essentially a rookie because he hasn't even played 30 games yet. So he did score his first goal, which was awesome. So now Steve and I's jersey bet is officially complete. Aaron Ekblad scored his first goal last year, obviously. So now Steve has to buy an Ekblad jersey, and Riemsdyk scored his goal, and now I have to buy a Van Riemsdyk jersey.
And I will.
Eventually. And I will eventually, too. but the next 6 weeks are going to be tough, because Van Riemsdyk is going to have to pick up the slack for Keith, as is our entire offense. We're just going to have to play a bit more of a defensive game because we have so few experienced defensemen now. And with Van Riemsdyk taking over Keith's place on the first line, and Seabrook now takes over Keith's place on the first power play line, It's just gonna change the dynamic of our team for the next month or month and a half. And the way some teams in the Western Conference are looking right now, we're gonna have to fight hard to stay relevant through the end of 2015. I mean, Dallas is playing out of their mind. Nashville is sticking right with the trend from last year and playing really well. The Blues are unfortunately playing really well, and the Wild are playing well. The Wild are playing very well. So I'm never worried about our offense. It never worries me. We always find a way to win when we have our defense at their best. But when our defense is not at their best and we have to play catch up a lot, it's not how our game works. It's just not how our game works. Kane and Taze need to be able to be in control of that offense. And when they have to sprint back to play more defense than normal, it throws our entire game plan off. So Keith being out sucks. Wish him the best, but we need him back ASAP because we cannot afford to slip. We're in sixth place right now. We cannot afford to slip any lower than that, or it's going to be tough playing catch up.
Right on. I can try and talk hockey.
Talk, man. Go for it.
Wilder 4-1-1 last time I checked. I believe their first loss came out here on the West Coast to, I think it was the LA Kings.
I believe you're right.
I think so. Yeah. The A topic seems to be in the Twin Cities. Is Devin Dubnyk going to be able to repeat last season's second half of the season's performance? He was on fire. Unfortunately, the Wild had dug themselves such a deep hole in the first half of the season that there wasn't an opportunity to rest Dubnyk until they locked in a playoff spot with, I think it was like 2 or 3 regular season games to go. So, although he got the opportunity to rest, albeit it was not a lot of rest. And it eventually ended up showing, especially in the series with the Blackhawks. Parise looks great. Hat trick in the opener after being down. I think they were down 3-0 going into the third period and put up 4 in the third period alone. That was pretty damn good. I've been hearing that everybody is super, super excited for Matt Dumba, who took steps forward as a young defenseman last year. That being said, the word I'm hearing is that he's trying to do a little bit too much right now. A lot of confidence coming off of last season, trying to do a little bit too much right now. Thomas Vanek is actually scoring. That is something people like. Paid him a lot of money, I'm told. Free agent, big free agent pickup. I mean, at the end of the day, the only thing I keep hearing from major, major hockey talkers in the Twin Cities, I listen to Twin City Sports Radio a lot, the main thing that I keep hearing is what are you going to do against Chicago? It's fine and great and dandy. You've made it to the postseason the last, you know, 2-3 seasons. That doesn't really mean much, though. If you're not going to be able to handle Chicago in any capacity, it's not really going to matter. So that's the main thing is, are you going to be able to, are you mentally tough enough to handle Chicago? Because now at this point, they've dropped so many series to Chicago and games in general to Chicago. It's at the point now where I guess the fear is, are they in your head? So mentally, can you get over the hurdle? The big money guys, it doesn't seem like anybody's worried about. Everybody's really happy with Suter, Parise. Now that Vanek's scoring, everybody's happy with him. Mikko Koivu's still the captain, so people are super, super pumped about that. Although I hear a lot of Wild fans wanting, I don't know if this is a thing, but they want Mikko Koivu to be stripped of his captain title, and they want them to give it to Zach Parise. I don't know. Twin City Sports Radio was fielding a lot of phone calls, all that, and mostly the radio personalities were like, you can't do that to a guy with the kind of equity that's been on the team as long as Koivu has. So, but outside of that, people are happy. I mean, it's still a football town, but when hockey season starts, at least in the Twin Cities, everybody catches the bug.
Yeah.
The Canadians are scary.
They are very scary.
Dude, they just beat Buffalo 7-2. And they're 8-0.
Buffalo's a dog shit team, though. I mean, but that's,
yeah, they're still 8-0.
That said, there's plenty of teams that they've beat.
That's
just so good.
That's frightening, dude. That is, how long can that? I mean, they could be 10-0 before anyone else gets their sixth win.
Who's their best player?
I'm not a big Canadian.
I'm just curious. I'm sorry, I'm putting you guys on the spot.
I have not.
PK Subban is fucking awesome.
I've heard that guy's name before.
Yeah, I mean, that team is just unreal. I mean, every time I turn on NHL League Pass, if you will.
Game Center,
fuck it. dude, every time I see the game on, they're leading by at least 2 goals.
It's not fair to be that good. They look scary, dude. I'm frightened. I'm frightened to play them.
Yeah, they're terrifying. Fuck that team.
Anything else you guys got?
No, I'm just excited for next week. Talk about the NBA.
I was going to say, tipping off soon.
We'll do a tip-off special next week.
Oh, shout out to my buddy at work, Connor. Congrats to his Mets for smashing, absolutely destroying the Cubbies. Although, Cubbies have a lot to look forward to.
Those Rooks are going to be great.
Very, very good. It was kind of it was interesting to see just because I felt like, for the most part, we were seeing lots of young arms on the Mets taking on lots of young bats on the Cubbies. Mm-hmm. And definitely the young arms got the better of them.
Absolutely.
Mets, though, after the trade for Cespedes, definitely were the team to beat in the National League. And they played Leggett in the NLCS. So hoping for a Royals-Mets series. That would make me happy.
What's the score right now?
I think the Jays are up. From what I saw in the ticker.
KC's up 2-1.
Oh, KC's up now. I was going to say Jose Bautista hit a homer. I saw that. But yeah, I hope it's Kansas City. If
I think it's going to be.
It makes the White Sox and the Twins look a lot better when there is the AL champions in their division.
Absolutely.
So we look a lot better.
Absolutely.
Playing against them a bunch. So.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for another episode of the 51-Yard Line. Find us on Facebook. Make sure to like that and subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review if you haven't yet. And, you know, always check out the website. I believe Drew, myself, and Christian all put up an article within the last week, so go check that out.
They did. The NFL refs suck.
All right. They do. And, yeah, we'll be back next week with NBA tip-off. So, for Steve Cravens.
Thank you for listening.
For Drew Willers.
Cheryl Reeve, Lindsey Whalen, Maya Moore, WNBA champions, baby. Bringing it home. Oh, we're not WNBA fans. Okay, cool. I didn't know that. Now I know that. I won't bring up WNBA anymore.
I'm Tyler Berry, and we'll see y'all next week.